Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 395.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we get one step closer to putting Trump on trial for January 6th. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad. And oh yeah, this week a federal circuit court found that a president can absolutely be held accountable for crimes he committed while in office, which I feel like collectively America was like, no duh. We'll keep you posted on it if that case ends up at the Supreme Court, because it might. But in the meantime, we're going to talk about Congress and the border deal. We'll also talk about the Taylor Swift Super Bowl conspiracy theory. Why are those words a combination of words that just came out of my mouth? And we're going to do a deep dive into the possible assholery of Apple Vision and menu trends across the nation and the Grammys. Okay, oh my God, so much to talk about this week. I am so excited by this panel we have assembled here today. You've heard her on this podcast before. You've loved her on this podcast before. She's a comedian. She's an author. She hosts a podcast called Two Wick Minimum. And yeah, it's about fucking candles. Deal with it. Also, she has a really hilarious parody account called NYT Vows on Instagram and on Twitter that is a parody of the New York Times vow section, wedding section. It is very, very funny. It is the one and only Selena Kopic. Hey, Selena.
Hi, Nagin. Hello, hello. Great to be here.
So excited to have you. And I'm also so excited for this next person. She's a culture journalist at the Financial Times. She's host of the podcast Life and Art, which I had the very, very good luck to be a part of recently. We did an episode on the movie
Something's Gotta Give.
That's right. Something's Gotta Give. And we had such a good time. And we got a little notice by Nancy Myers herself.
We got a response from Nancy Myers. She said, thank you.
I mean, I feel
this
like
is Nancy Myers.
I feel like I should have led with that. folks, so it's her first time on this show, but I know you will love her. It is the one and only Lila Raptopoulos. Hey,
hi, Nagin. Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the show, I just want to remind listeners that Patreon is extra fun these days. We just dropped an episode about people who think that their pets are a version of themselves with Liz Winstead and Dustin Chafin. We have so much fun in these bonus episodes. We really let our hair down. We really go for it. So all you have to do to join on the fun is go to patreon.com/NagineFarsad. For as little as $4 a month, you get bonus episodes of the show, 2 bonus episodes a month. And then there's tiers above that. And you not only get to support a show that I think you love, a lot of you seem to be sticking around, but you get bonus stuff, and it's a really good time. So go to patreon.com/NagineFarsad. Now let's get into it with topic number one, culture. Mm-hmm. All right, so we are going to look at the latest product release from Apple. It's the Apple Vision headset. It's a virtual reality headset that I guess enables you to totally detach from the real world and become a worse person than you already are. I think I'm paraphrasing their marketing materials, but it's something like that, I believe. I guess, Selena, what do you think of these headsets?
Oh man! In the immortal words of the '80s film series, nerds. I'm sorry. No one looks cool wearing these things. This is the dweebiest, nerdiest thing I've ever seen. Like, I'm sorry to be a hater, but like, not only does it seem so dweeby, it also seems wholly uncomfortable. Like, there's only so long. Like, it's strapped to your dome. It looks very heavy. I just can't get over how terrible this, I think it is.
Lila.
I agree. Purely for vanity's sake, I don't want to put that on my head. I also don't want to be more in the internet, and I don't want to spend $3,500.
Yes, it's so expensive.
Oh, my God.
It's $3,500. You can also spend $199 for an extra battery pack so that it doesn't run out on you while you're in that miserable world that you're looking at.
I don't know if you both saw this, but there was one Twitter user who was like, look how great this is. He was watching 7 screens inside of his inside of his sort of headset. Yeah. And he was trying to show off. And then he said, look, I can do all of this at breakfast. And then he tried to take a bite of his breakfast sandwich and couldn't because it couldn't get under his goggles. I just thought, like, I keep that thing away from me. Like, this isn't cool. Wake me up and tell me when it's taking over the world.
So, like, the UX experience of the reality part of using the headset needs some work.
I think so.
You know, the other fun thing about these headsets is, like, I saw a video of a woman like cooking with it and she just like, her big innovation was that she put like 2 timers on in the headset. And so, you know, and it's also when you look at the video of the headset, I think I was sort of expecting to see like a jungle and then, you know what I mean? Your kitchen has been transformed. And it was literally like just her kitchen, but there was like 2 timers. Mm-hmm. And she's like, look at what I've done, 2 timers. And I'm like, but I can do that like on my phone. Also, I have one of those timers that sit on the counter that I just do by hand, egg timer type deals.
Good old analog.
Oh yeah, classic. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, well, it which feels like it's so much nicer. I have to be an egg timer, so much nicer. Also, I was thinking about you, Selena, that like your obsession with candles is the exact opposite of the Apple Vision set. It's like if there's 2 things that are diametrically opposed. It's like the warmth and comfort of a candlelit environment with humans.
Yeah, versus you get to be isolated, but in public. I mean, imagine if they did one where you could be having candles around you in this weird vision headset.
Yeah.
Like, that would truly be like the snake eating its own tail of these vision headsets.
Yes, yes.
Also, I mean, it seems like it's solving for a problem that doesn't exist. Like, look at this. I can have 2 timers at once.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Since time immemorial, we've been doing that.
I know.
Totally.
No, Benjamin Franklin was like, I have 2, what are those called with the sand in them? What are those things called?
Sand through the hourglass.
Hourglass. Yeah. Okay.
Do you guys not watch Days of Our Lives? Sand through the hourglass.
It feels that way also. I mean, like, the other thing that happens is just your email, when they're on, it seemed like people are walking in Times Square and then their email is open in their way. that they have to now walk around their email in physical space. Nobody wants. I don't need that.
Oh, look, aren't you going to like trip over some? I mean, I don't understand. Aren't you going to, isn't the email blocking like a fire hydrant that you will directly run into?
It seems
to
be.
I just don't understand.
Yeah.
My other prediction for this, and I guess we'll close on predictions. You know, I remember when Google tried to do this with actually what looked like a lighter thing. I mean, it wasn't virtual reality. What Google
Glass.
Google Glass.
Yeah.
I think this will go the way of the glass hole because it looks so just intolerable to look at.
You know
what I mean? Yeah. That like I feel like people will immediately, they're just, the backlash feels so immediate. I don't know if it's just a backlash with me, I'm backlashing, or if America will backlash, but what are your predictions?
Google Glass is a perfect example to me of something that, like, sure, the technology could eventually get somewhere, but do people actually want it? Like, people don't want that in their face, really, and it died.
Right.
And I worried that there would be a day when these became contact lenses and then people would want that. But I feel like we've learned that there's like a limit that people have to how much technology they want around them until they start to feel like groggy and slow and gross and bad. So I hope that it just doesn't catch on and it only catches on for gamers. But if it gets more advanced and, you know, I mean, I feel like I might just be a Luddite that's not seeing something also.
Yo, Luddite Live.
No, I know.
My, you know what it reminds me of? Like the saying the person has like seven screens open, it isn't that exciting. It reminds me, did you guys ever read that Dave Eggers book, The Every? I believe it was The Every. Where basically it's like this, you know, sort of future dystopian idea of everyone works at a Facebook like company, you know, the main character works. And she has like seven screens and she's forever having to like thumbs up, ding, ding, ding. You know, and it's supposed to be an idea of hell. And so I can't believe anyone's like, we got this, I just paid a bunch of money for this. Check it out, you know?
Very Black Mirror.
There was a show, I think it was on, I want to say Apple TV, I can't remember, about Sean Penn, with Sean Penn, like, going to Mars. Not about Sean Penn.
I miss Sean Penn.
I know. He was the lead in this TV show that nobody watched except for me. And the thing was they were going to Mars. And so it was set, like, 10 years into the future. So there were subtle differences between our lives and that life. And one of the subtle differences wasn't that they were using these kind of, like, huge virtual reality headsets, but they had these really slim, just look like regular glasses, like sunglasses. And they would sit in their, and they would be like, let's watch the ballet. And they would sit on their couch as a family, put on their little glasses and watch the ballet.
Yeah.
And I was like, I guess that could happen. But the only reason that seemed more reasonable is because the actual glasses were so lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I think, you know, this is not going to be comfortable or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Also, the idea with the glasses was that it's like something you sit and do. So it's like it was replacing a television set. It wasn't replacing any kind of life having.
Right. And I could imagine actually, like, it would be kind of interesting to walk in some sort of physical space where, like, if I was like working on some complex story and I was like wanted to visualize all of it at once and move things around like a Minority Report or something. Maybe there's like some real life hacky kind of thing that you could do in there to get your work done in a different way. But
they actually introduced a lot of virtual reality programming for the, you know, the United Nations when they were sort of like, oh, look at this refugee camp. This is what it looks like.
Yeah.
This is what it feels like. And I can imagine there being like an empathetic experience. I mean, all that shit just makes me want to like vomit literally because I get motion sickness.
right.
Also vomit metaphorically because I hate this world in that way. But so I can see what you mean. There is like maybe an empathy trigger that it can help.
Yeah,
I'll
that
say I don't think it's enough of a bonus. So there we go.
I agree.
All right, let us move on to the Grammys. They just happened this weekend. There was a bunch of moments on stage. I'll just pull out a couple of moments, and you guys can feel free to add in. Joni Mitchell took the stage. Now, you already grasped your heart, Lila. And I just want to say, as like the children of immigrants, that Joni Mitchell and her entire thing is a little bit like means very little to me because I just didn't grow up with that. But I know that a lot of you did. So tell me why you grasped your heart.
Sure. My mother was sort of like a hippie in the 70s,
okay,
and Joni Mitchell.
So,
Mitchell was one of the, that song was one of the songs that she just played on repeat. So there was something sort of like, there was some sweetness to that, an icon of that era in that way, sort of like aging out. And still being able to like sing and be moving, and for that song to like still mean something, you know, 50 years later. Is my math okay?
I think so. Yeah.
So that was kind of what moved me, is like, okay, she's a legend. She was doing something different this whole time. Like she was like more, she had this sort of like internal, she like expressed her feelings in a way that was like interesting back then.
And Selena, what is it like? I don't know if you have any connection to Joni Mitchell, but like, I felt like it was cool to see an old woman do a thing, because we just, you know what I mean? We generally don't like love it when old women do things. So like, I thought that was nice.
Oh, totally. And I thought it was so touching. Same here, Nagin. You know, I know Joni Mitchell's music and I really like it, but I didn't grow up with it. Like, you know, my parents didn't really listen to it. But I really love that Brandi Carlile is such a good friend to her, and such like, I love when you see the younger generation boosting up their mentors and their inspiration. And Brandi Carlile is just such a gem and such a talent. So I thought that was really cool to see that partnership. And you saw it throughout the Grammys, you know, a lot of like pairing older and younger generations, and it was very inspiring.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was another moment that I felt like warranted discussion, which is Jay-Z. So Jay-Z won an award, the Dr. Dre Award for Impact, and he said on stage, basically, like, criticized the Grammys for not giving Beyonce the album of the year. This is what he said specifically. He said, but you know, some things, I don't want to embarrass the young lady, but she has more Grammys than everyone and never won album of the year. So even by your own metrics, that doesn't work. Think about that. The most Grammys, never won album of the year. That doesn't work. I feel like I'm so sad for these two billionaires and how they've been wronged. But it's not enough to have won the most Grammys of all time. Is that not enough? I just felt like it makes them look small. I don't know. And this was a complaint that someone brought up when we were talking about Barbie and Greta Gerwig not getting nominated, and Margot Robbie not getting nominated. And I was sort of like, I don't know, I was more put off by that for whatever reason. But now looking back on that, I'm like, yeah, you know what? Who cares? You guys are celebrated and decorated with piles of money. You know, you could probably just make one of those Grammys for yourself for like 20 bucks. You know what I mean?
And they've been validated, you know, like they've won other Grammys. It just seems like, if you want to do some weird, like, you know, sort of category, like sort of, I don't know. It just seems like if you want to undermine the Grammys, you did, like, you won these Grammys, but not this Grammy. So you're unhappy. Like, seems like, oh, if you want to be miserable, you can find a way to be miserable.
Are the other Grammys, know? Like, smaller in size? Like, what is the problem with those, like, other Grammys?
The math around this. I mean, it feels like the reverse of, like, I feel like all baseball data is always like, oh my gosh, that's the only time anyone's ever caught a ball during the third inning during their second season playing for the A's. You know, like, it just feels like there's such a weird mathematical formula of trying to figure out how you know, like, either got shortchanged or nailed it, you know?
Yeah. I'm actually going to defend Jay-Z,
Let's hear it. Yes.
First of all, I really liked the Grammys this year more than I expected. But I think when I listened to him, I was like, okay, this man's a little nervous. He brought his daughter Blue Ivy up, and she did not want to go up, and she didn't really know what to do with her hands. She was like, why did you do this? When do I clap?
Oh, I agree with her. Why did he do this?
But I agree that the way that they choose who gets awards is flawed. Awards in general are flawed, I feel like. Even in journalism, you have to pay to be considered for an award. And like,
that's
like
a problem.
Nuts.
Yeah.
So that feels silly to me in general. I do agree they've been sort of like rewarded in so many ways, and they are considered the greatest of all times. But Album of the Year is the most important one. And somehow, I don't know, Taylor Swift has won a lot and Beyonce has lost. I looked up who Beyonce has lost to, and it was like Beck, Adele, Harry Styles. Yeah. Why did she lose to Harry Styles? She lost for Lemonade.
Really? I mean, Harry Styles is also a global phenomenon. I mean, I'm not saying that I prefer her albums to Oddly, I love Beck, but whatever. Like, I prefer her albums to Adele's or Harry Styles or whatever. So it's like if it's me in my CD player, I don't have any CD. If it's me in my phonograph, I'm gonna put on a Beyonce phonograph. But I don't know. Harry Styles was also a global phenomenon. So in that year, it makes sense. He was everywhere. People loved that guy.
Yeah, but if it's about, like, what did you do with this album, the people who put together the album, the work that was put into it, the, like, product itself and how complex it was and what it did for society or whatever, I would say that Beyoncé's albums have more people working on them that are doing more interesting things and changing things more and asking better questions than Harry Styles.
All right.
I don't know.
All right. Well, folks, please weigh in. Where are you on this Jay-Z moment? And do you want your husband to go on stages across America and ask for you to get more things? Because maybe that was his Valentine's Day gift. Like, you know what I mean? Like a public declaration.
Immediately after, though, Beyoncé wrapped up the situation and the entire unit blew Beyoncé and Jay all
right after that award?
Wow.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Ooh, yeah.
So maybe she was embarrassed and maybe there was an argument.
She doesn't like stuff like that, yeah.
I can imagine feeling very uncomfortable about that. Like, you know, because it doesn't look gracious, I think, because it makes it look like you're not happy for the people who do win those things, you know? And also, it's like, I don't want to take an award away from Adele. That seems mean. Mm-hmm. Also, she did her time on stage being like, Beyoncé should have won this, you know, Adele for the record. So, enough, a lot of people bow down to Beyoncé, you know, whatever. Okay, let us move on. But do let me know what you think. This is this is a heated topic. All right, let's take a quick break to hear about our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll continue with politics.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Today's show is sponsored by Rocket Money. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I have used Rocket Money. And you guys, honestly, I had no idea how many things I was subscribing to that I didn't want to be subscribing to. I think we enter into subscriptions with a Pollyanna view that we're going to use as a subscription, even though it's a super obscure, you know, education app from Albania that teaches Russian math or whatever. And then you're like, I'm never going to use this. Why did I get it? I should remember to cancel it. And then you don't. And I know you guys are like me, and I know you've done this to yourselves. And guess what? 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about. So we're all in this bucket. And I think paying for that stuff is so angering. And Rocket Money is there to help, because basically Rocket Money shows you, hey, look at this is what all the things you are subscribed to. But then here's the bigger thing. To unsubscribe, you don't have to go through the whole rigmarole. Rocket Money unsubscribes for you with a click of a button. It's so easy. The other thing Rocket Money did for me, which I was incredibly grateful for, was reduce the cost of one of my bills. It was my cable bill. Yes, I still have cable. Rocket Money has over 5 million users that have saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. I mean, that tracks for me and for the number of things I was paying for that I'm frankly ashamed of. So thank you, Rocket Money, for like fixing the shame glaze on my life. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. rocketmoney.com/fakethenation, you guys. And we are back, and we're ready for topic number two, politics. All right, so one of this week's big news is that Congress is still being a big bag of dicks. The GOP had linked aid to Ukraine and Israel to a border deal. Biden and the Democrats accepted that tenuous linkage. They negotiated a bipartisan deal. Everyone was on board, and then Trump came in and said, no, don't give Biden a win. Do not vote for that deal. And then the spineless people of GOP members of Congress agreed. And I don't even like being mean to Congress, but you know what I mean? Like, but this one really got me, because like, what the literal fuck? So my question, besides what the literal fuck is, does the average voter think about things in terms of don't give Biden a win or the board? Like, how much is the average voter? This seems like a crazy line of thinking to me, that in February of an election year, they're playing this game. Lila, what do you think?
I feel, working in a newsroom called the Financial Times, I feel like being the culture person on it reminds me daily how much I'm not an expert in this. But I do think, my sense is like, average voters don't want tit for tat stuff like that. Maybe have all but accepted. I feel like I've all but accepted that just nothing happens in an election year, which is really a bummer. But I also, one thing I have noticed in media reporting, partially at the ITC, but across media, is that Americans are just tuning out of election coverage this year.
Yes, I actually, you told this to me when we were, for whatever reason, it came up when we were doing Something's Gotta Give. And you know, so you guys have found that people are tuning out of election coverage.
Well, so
but tuning into like war coverage.
Yeah, internationally, we still have a lot of readers of U.S. election coverage. Americans, I asked the things that Americans are reading the most at the FT is the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, developments in the economy because we're the FT, like inflation and that sort of thing, and then, quote, the circus of Elon Musk's life decisions.
Wow. So those are like three big items that lead political coverage.
Yeah. I mean, but that's for us. I mean, there's also like the New York Times said that there's Axios said that there's like there's a lot of TV news has just said that like political coverage is just not something people are like kind of out. There's way less engagement with the debates. Yeah. Engagement with political news is down. Cable news ratings are down.
Primary turnout is down. Yeah. I mean, straight up in, you know, Iowa, New Hampshire.
Big time.
Selena, what do you think?
Oh, I do think that there is sort of election coverage fatigue, or maybe it's just sort of like outrage fatigue. And like, it just seems like every time we turn around. But I really hope that people are paying attention to the fact that, Lila, as you say, like, the Republicans are playing it in this tit for tat way of like, I don't want to give you any wins. And I don't know, of the sort of long term old school Republicans that I know from growing up, I would hope that they see this and are feeling like, God, this feels unconscionable. It just feels like you don't want what's best for the country or anyone in it. And I'm curious, how people in southern states, in particular perhaps Texas, who might be feeling like you know, whether or not they're feeling how the border feels, or they're just kind of feeling the vibe that they're being told to feel about how if the border feels like it's a tenuous situation, the fact that, yeah, the Republicans are unwilling to do anything about it.
And I also think it feels a little bit like a missed opportunity for the Republicans, because I feel like they view, you know, like there's that rule in improv, like don't go A to B, go A to D or whatever. Like, don't think of the first thing that comes to your mind in improv comedy. Like, go to the fourth or the fifth thing that comes to mind, because that'll just be a more surprising, like, thing.
Yeah,
and I think in my interpretation of that here is that, why are they looking at this as a defeat for the GOP? They could have spun it like, this is a win for the GOP. We held Biden's feet to the fire and we got a border security deal. If you'd like to see more of that, please vote for us or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's an easy way to spin this as a win on both sides, but like the GOP could take it and run with it as some sort of win if that's what they have to do. But obviously Trump is not a visionary in that way, so he's not going to do that. But I just want to point out that here, this is exactly so many things that they've wanted for so long. The border deal would have included measures to toughen border security. It would not have included any of the stuff Democrats want, like a pathway to citizenship, or more protections for people who are brought here as children. It would make it harder for migrants to claim asylum, but it would speed up processing of their cases. It would expand federal detention centers, but it would also make it easier to shut down the border when they encountered more than 5,000 crossings a day. So this seems like all the stuff, a lot of the stuff that GOP,
it's what Republicans
what they want. This is what they want. And they're throwing it away because of a guy who doesn't know how to go A to D.
Yeah. If anything, it looks sort of like they're just sort of like eating themselves from the inside or something.
Yeah.
But they don't look. Doesn't look good.
Let's turn our attention to conspiracy theories. The latest is about the NFL, that the NFL basically rigged the game so that Kansas City Chiefs would play in the Super Bowl, so that Taylor Swift would be at the Super Bowl and that Taylor would endorse Biden or something. Or as Allison Steinberg from the right-wing One America News Network put it, quote, it's a coordinated marketing campaign by Democrats to leverage celebrities to excite their base into coming out and voting. That is how it's being read. Now, here's my question for you guys. So Taylor actually endorsed Biden in 2020. The fact that she may again do that seems really boring and obvious.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know what that's. So who cares? The cat's out of the bag of that. So I'm definitely confused by this conspiracy theory, but I guess it's refreshing that no one in this theory is a pedophile. So that feels like a departure from the regular. So I don't know. Selena, what did you make of this conspiracy theory?
I like, it's so insane to me that anyone finds it hard to believe that two profoundly famous, extremely wealthy, wildly successful, pretty good looking, seemingly sort of simple celebs would find each other and like really vibe. You know, like, I mean, also, like, I'm just so happy that Taylor Swift has finally decided to join us over in the warm pool of dating guys who are, you know, like, just sweet, sweet dudes that are, you know,
cute dum-dums.
They're like golden retrievers, baby, golden retrievers. But yeah, it's just so, I mean, when you're at that level of fame, it's just the conspiracy theory is so funny to me, because it's like actually everything about them dating is so logical and obvious.
Totally. It is. Lila.
Yeah.
And by the way, Vivek Ramaswamy was touting this conspiracy theory. This is like who sits right next to Trump, I think, most of the time, feeding him his tacos or whatever. So what do you think of this conspiracy theory, like literally being that close to the candidate?
I mean, I feel like it's sort of like it has this is it the QAnon energy, or it has the energy of people who don't like seeing two people like being cute together.
Right, right. Happiness.
You know?
Yep,
there's like something like they're like, you know, I mean, and I'll say, to be honest, initially I did not think that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce were in love. I thought I was a hater. I thought it was a PR stunt.
Sure, yeah.
My
Could
boyfriend.
Still be you a found, PR stunt. We know.
Yeah, did you see his, you're like, then I found his tweets and I realized maybe this guy is the sweet.
Well, then well, then I remembered, like, they both are desperate to be famous. They really love fame. And so they could connect in that way. I didn't mean that as a diss. I think there's like, there are ways in which they could connect. And, you know, believe in love. I was like, my boyfriend was like, come on, Lila, believe in love. I believe they're in love. Just who cares? And I was like, okay, I admit it. They're into it. I could tell, you know, whatever.
I also love the idea of a first date where the two of them are like, oh my God, you love being famous. I love being famous. I can't believe we have that in common.
Exactly.
You like the color red? I like the color red.
You want to be more famous? I have an idea. Yeah, but I think these like conspiracy theory boys need to admit it. They need to believe in love. My next question is just like, why do we care so much about this?
Yes.
And I don't know the answer. Maybe it's because I don't want to pay attention to politics, but I find myself being
drawn to this.
Drawn.
I just find it, again, because like this courting Taylor, I mean, I imagine everyone courts Taylor Swift's everything for everything. I mean, right. Like fucking nail polish brands are probably courting Taylor Swift. Everyone courts Taylor right. Swift. So like the idea that the Biden campaign is courting Taylor Swift doesn't feel weird in any way. Mm-hmm. So that's the part of the conspiracy theory that I find bizarre, is that there's no theory. It's out in the open. Everyone courts Taylor Swift openly, you know? The fact that the NFL is involved, I mean, obviously that's crazy. Like, it just feels so, so ludicrous. And I think there's something here that I find interesting, which is that the Republicans think that the NFL belongs to them or something. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's just one of those last bastions of bipartisanship that the NFL belongs to everyone who loves traumatic brain injuries. Sorry, sorry. I have a child and I would never let her play football. That's my position on it, unfortunately. And my husband played college football and he also would not let his child play football.
I don't blame you. I think the other thing that's worth remembering is like the Super Bowl is the last thing that basically everybody watches. It's like the one thing in our monoculture. Yeah. It is the most watched thing by far on television in America.
Yes.
So like everything just gets played out there. Everything that they could possibly fit in to get played out there does, because they know so many people are watching. So I don't know. I can understand why they would want to throw out a dumb conspiracy to attach to this thing just so anybody talks about them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Last item I'm just going to throw out you real quick is that Haley lost to none of the above in the Nevada primary. Now, caveat, Nevada is really confusing because they're supposed to have a primary, but she was the only candidate on there. Trump wasn't on there. They're also the Republicans in Nevada have decided to have a caucus, and that's where they're going to assign their delegates. So the primary actually didn't have any delegates. It's a really dumb and confusing situation, but she did technically lose to none of the above. For the people who, knowing that it was totally worthless, still turned out to vote in that primary or whatever, they, I think, obviously turned out because they want to make a statement about Haley. I mean, I don't know. Why would you go out to vote for none of the above? So I don't know. Thoughts? Is this another nail in the coffin of her candidacy, or Nevada's just too complicated for it to be a thing?
I think, I mean, how tragic and hilarious to lose to like, no thanks.
I know. I know.
But I mean, honestly, it feels like offering someone like a ride home during a storm and they're like, I'll walk, you know, like, but like, I mean, and I've heard this said before, I think, you know, I don't think it's the nail in the coffin. I think she would be wise to keep her head down and keep on stepping as long as she can, because I'll be curious how things shake out with Trump as far as, you know, different states deciding if he can or cannot be on their ballot ultimately, you know, assorted investigations going on with him, you know, like, I don't know. I think she might be wise to just keep it, try to keep it moving as long as she can. But yeah, I mean, that is humiliating for sure. And I kind of love it.
That's a good point. I agree. I'd be curious to see what happens if she just keeps going. But yeah, I read that this morning. Oof. It's like a real woof. Oof.
Yeah, I know. Well, we'll obviously keep our eye on what's happening with Haley, though. I do love that her recent turn of just like being really clear on, you know, her appearance on SNL, her like just being very clearly like, no, like Trump is ridiculous. What are we doing? And I wish she had kind of gotten there a little bit earlier, but it is nice to just have that voice in the air. All right, let us move on to topic number three. There was a piece piece in the New York Times called Menu Trends That Define Dining Right Now. And they basically looked at 121 menus across the country to capture some trends. And we're going to talk about some of what they found. First up, remember QR codes, you guys. I was asked to use a QR code at a restaurant recently, and I like audibly gasped because it felt like such a throwback, so out of step. And I was right, because according to this analysis, physical menus aren't just back, quote, they have more personality than ever. So here's a couple of the trends. Menus have shrunk. There's a half page menu or a vertical long menu. There's no pages to flip. I guess talk to me about the transition from QR codes, or were you the two Americans who were okay with QR codes? talk to me about your feelings about that.
I know Lila said she's a Luddite. I too am a Luddite. Mm. So I hated every moment of QR code mania. Yeah. Because also, like, sometimes your phone doesn't work or you don't want to have it right. I don't want to have it at my fingertips at all times.
Yeah.
So I am so glad that many places have done away with QR codes, because I just, like, is it too much? Do I have to bring my own menu to your restaurant? You know, like, how about you hand me some printed material that you made, you know?
Yeah.
So I got to say, I really enjoyed this article. I think it was such a fun exploration. They did a deep dive. The journalist did a fantastic job with it. But Lila, your thoughts on QR code versus hard copy?
I agree. I also really don't miss when you had to also order on your phone. It felt like, what are we doing
here? That's horrible.
Isn't the point the service and the experience and the chit-chat and the which one and pointing together? And, I like all that stuff. I don't miss it at all. And when I am asked to use a QR code, sometimes I ask for a printed menu.
I haven't developed the courage to do that, but I think that's a really reasonable question. And I also think the other interesting thing that they found during the QR code era is that people ended up actually ordering less, because there's something about having to flip back and forth and scroll back and forth and, like, whatever, find the thing.
Yeah.
It made it so that you ended up ordering less, and it actually was like a net, negative for the restaurant industry. Now, here's something interesting they found about menus. Shrunken font sizes. I am very upset by that. Shrunken font sizes in, like, a candlelit environment.
I know.
You guys.
Mm-hmm. They said that one menu is using a 5-point font. I was like, that is cruelty.
It is. It's a form of torture.
Yeah.
Oh, it truly, yeah. I mean, that is so, also, oh, I love font talk. Gosh. I worked in publishing for 17 years, and I love, Georgia is my favorite font of all time.
Shout out to Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia's the greatest. It was fascinating to see how they said that some are so teeny, teeny, tiny.
Horrible.
You know? Ugh.
It's true. It reminds me, I went out to up to Boston to visit my parents this past weekend, and we went out to dinner and at this kind of trendy restaurant, and the two of them had they couldn't read the size of the font, and they had the candles, and they were, like, trying with the candles to see, because it was so dark, and they just gave up, and they both put on their flashlights at the same time at the table.
Yeah. Oh, by the way,
our table was, like, looked like an influencer table, and then it was just, like, my 80-year-old dad and my mom.
Well, and I'm not even the age of your parents, and I've had to do that because I've always had, like, shitty nighttime eyeballs, and so, like, I have had to, like, for years, though, like, take out another source of light, either the candle or whatever. And it's embarrassing. Just make it a little bigger. It's not that big a deal. Just make the font larger, you guys.
I did like some of the creativity in the menus, though. Like, I like the ones that had the stamp of the date, or the people who sort of drew on the menus, like when the servers kind of circled things and they drew a little draw. I don't know. I liked the weirdest ones. I like when they bring a board.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I like the boards.
Anything handwritten, I like.
I was going to say, I liked in this article what they talked about sort of trends in food right now, which I thought, and this is so embarrassing. I very much was like, those are all the things that I like right now. And it's like, yes, Selena, you're a cog in the wheel. Like, but I'm going through a caviar phase. And it's like, no, everyone is.
Yeah. They made you go through a caviar phase.
Exactly.
Totally.
Oh, my
well,
God.
I was taken by the Caesar salad phase that apparently we're all in. And by the way, I feel like Caesar salads feel like a 1970. I don't know when they're from. When are Caesar Caesar salads from, whatever. It just feels like a throwback menu option. Mm-hmm. Or like, yeah, like a steakhouse option. And now there's all these like, you know, riffs on the Caesar salad. It's a Caesar salad, but with miso and stuff like that, which then it's like, isn't it just then another salad? Like, it does it still have to be connected to the word Caesar? You know what I mean? Yeah.
I wonder whether if they put Caesar, the number of orders just goes up naturally because people are like, oh, I know exactly what that is, even if it doesn't even taste like a Caesar salad anymore.
You have to tender, you got to like, you know, link it to some known quantity. It's like the remix of Roadhouse, which looks nothing like Roadhouse. Right.
No, it's literally just like enough. It's like, you know, the Marvel universe, right? It's like, this is in the Caesar salad universe, and all we know is existing IP, and we just have to riff on existing IP, and that's what salads have become.
I wish we were better than that, but I don't think we are.
The other thing, okay, here's another thing that I thought was interesting about the menus. Now, menus are touting values. So apparently the last era of menudom was about the menu being farm to table. So that was really talked about on a menu. If it was farm to table, they let you know about it. But now there's an emphasis on workers' rights. So owners will take that opportunity to credit every employee or know that they provide health insurance on the menu. Now, do you like to see stuff like that on the menu, or does it sort of take you out of it where you're like, oh, I just wanted to have a nice meal, and now I'm thinking about the labor rights movement? what do you think of this trend?
I don't know, actually.
I know, because I feel like I just am putting you in a minefield. Like, there's no right answer to this. Just so you know, Lila is doing the best she can with the minefield I've thrown her into.
No.
I got canceled because of a menu discussion.
Like, I think I'm going to get canceled because of my opinion about Shaq, which is coming up, so don't worry about it. I think the thing that would bother me is when they say, when they ask you to tip a certain amount because it's expensive, not because we shouldn't tip a certain amount, but because they're basically saying, can you like offset if we're paying our workers, like our workers should be paid more. So can you offset by tipping more than you,
right?
Than 20% or 25%.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, it's a hard industry and it's hard to, I don't know. I have a lot of sympathy for the restaurant industry. They, I don't know. It's like you don't make a lot of money in it, and it costs a lot to do that work. Yeah,
you and you work really, really hard. Yeah, hours.
Yeah, my fiance is a bartender at Tavern on the Green. Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's great. But so I've learned a lot about how all of this works just from his experiences. And it's interesting how, like at the holiday time, sometimes they'll do, you know, like an auto gratuity just to make sure, you know, like, just for, as a you know, on like Christmas Day or whatever. But yeah, I find it very interesting. But yeah, I agree that it is sort of it's a strange thing of, you know, maybe the restaurant trying to absolve themselves of any, you know, being like, well, I guess it's on you if our people are having them.
If you don't want, you know, Pierre to have health insurance, then that's your fault. Yeah.
Enjoy your Caesar salad, jerk.
Look Peter in the eye and tell him you don't care about him.
Yeah. Exactly. No, I'm again, like I've said this before, specifically about online purchasing, is there are things that we need to price into the item. And one of those things is the environmental cost for online shipping, and that is almost never priced into the item. It has been subsidized by a just choking Mother Earth. And everything you buy online should actually be more expensive. And so, yeah, maybe just these restaurants, everything you buy at a restaurant, we should just all admit should be more expensive. And again,
yes, I agree.
That's an unpopular position, it's unpopular with me and my wallet as well. Like, I don't want to go and pay more, but I also understand that labor being what it is, maybe I should pay more. You know what I mean? It's a tough one. All right, folks. Oh my gosh. That is the end of the show. What a fun show this has been. I would really love for the people at Faith the Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do. Selena, where do they do that?
Yes, all my socials are either Selena Kopick, SelenaCopoc, or NYTVOWS, where I lampoon the New York Times wedding section. Two-wick minimum is wherever you get your podcasts. I drop a fresh candle conversation every other week.
So
and then for old time's sake, I have a stand-up album on iTunes and Spotify called Seen Better Days. That's a lot of fun.
Folks, it is a lot of fun because I've listened to it, seen it live, did all of the things involving this album, and it's so wonderful. So please consume everything that Selena has to offer because you will enjoy yourself. Lila, where do people find you?
Number one is our podcast, Life and Art with FT Weekend. That is everywhere you listen to podcasts. So follow us there and you will get to know me and my funny little colleagues. No, my wonderful, brilliant colleagues and guests like Nagin and others. Also, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Lila Rapp. I spend a lot more time on Instagram, so you can follow me there. You can also read a lot of my writing, culture reporting through links. From Instagram.
Folks, do check out the Life and Art pod. I had such a blast going on this pod.
It was so fun.
We talked about a movie that week, but they talk about all manner of stuff from culture, and it is a really, really good time. I think you will love that podcast.
Thank you. We're doing the Super Bowl this week.
Oh, this of course. I hope you talk about the conspiracy
Absolutely.
Theory. Oh, thank God.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, this was a little primer.
It was.
Folks, you know where to find me and all the stuff that I do. I'll be in Chicago tomorrow. At the Wait Don't Tell Me at a Wait Don't Tell Me taping. So if you happen to be in Chicago on a Thursday night looking for something to do, there may or may not be tickets left. Go see. Also, I want to remind listeners that they can support the show by going to patreon.com/NaginFarsad. Again, for as little as $4. You know what you can buy for $4? One of those little organic things of raspberries from the supermarket. And I think the inorganic version is maybe like $3.50. So look, point is raspberries worth of show you will get for supporting the show at patreon.com/NaginFarsad. And also, we're trying to ramp up our Spotify reviews and our Apple Podcast reviews because it really helps people find the show. So if you listen to the show on Spotify and or Apple or any of the places where they let you review, please review. And we will be sharing some of those reviews in the coming weeks. And I know that everyone has election fatigue, but races to watch is back in full effect in 2024. That is electoral races to watch. So hit me up with your races. I want to start highlighting some of them. And again, I know we have fatigue, but we still have some work to do. Well, let's try and have fun doing it. Hey, that's the mandate for 2024. Otherwise, I want to thank everyone who makes the show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making the show a possibility. Thanks to Gabby Alter for our theme music. If you have any thoughts, concerns, questions, you can reach us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. And we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.